It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Steps back, three. Yes, sir.
Get a shot up. This is for the win.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome in to a beautiful Monday edition of Overtime. What a weekend behind us. What a week ahead of us in the sports world. Welcome in to Overtime once again. On today's show, we're breaking down an earth-shattering move as a head coach, the top of the mountain in college basketball, is saying, thanks for everything. I'm moving on up to the NBA. That's right. Dusty May of the Michigan Wolverines moving on to become the next head coach of the Dallas Mavericks. That news, the big headline today as we dive right in to the Monday, June 22nd edition of Overtime. On today's show, on this day in sports history, World Cup, college baseball, college World Series, latest from there, and a primer for a winner-take-all national championship game tonight from down the road in Omaha. A lot to love there between the Sooners and Tar Heels. We'll also get you up to date on the World Cup, where Team USA turns out is pretty darn good at soccer, at football, and where they stand right now in the latest odds as they find another way to get by another opponent. And they have already won the group stage. Group D, Team USA moving on. Do they have anything to play for? Technically, no, when they face off with Turkey on Thursday, but it's up for debate. Do you play your players? Do you get different rotations in there? Do you rest Pulisic? Absolutely, you do. But the other decisions are going to be made by the powers that be for Team USA out to a tremendous start. Best case scenario, absolutely, for Team USA. We dive right into the World Cup and college baseball, College World Series finale tonight from Omaha in the middle of hour number one. And then we open it up and talk some Sioux Falls Canaries baseball. Manager Mike Meyer carving out some time for us at the end of hour one. We'll be chatting with the manager around 11:40. Sioux Falls right in the thick of it, tied for the top spot in the Western Division as far as wins go with Kansas City. Two more losses, though, so the Canaries find themselves just one game back in the West Division standings. We touch all the bases. Sioux Falls Canaries baseball at the end of hour one with manager Mike Meyer. Hour two opens up with your headlines and highlights, latest from the National Football League, and I am doing the homework. I started this project on Friday, worked on it, tinkered on it over the weekend, and I got a definitive list for you of the teams that should be interested in Brendan Sorsby. Every team should be moderately to a little bit interested in Brendan Sorsby in the supplemental draft, should it happen. Not yet confirmed, but should it happen, that'll take place next month. We'll dive into the teams that absolutely should wager, not everything, but a second-round pick, third-round pick in the draft, try to land Brendan Sorsby, the immediate need crowd. Then we talk about the teams like the Green Bay Packers and many others that are in the, that could make a lot of sense to land Brendan Sorsby. And then there's other teams flirting around as well. I think I ranked up about 22, 24 total teams, not all 32, but those 22, 24 teams in terms of risk and if it's worth it, and the immediacy of a Brendan Sorsby selection in next month's supplemental NFL draft. We talk about that, latest NFL news, and more in hour two. And then we conclude the show getting you the latest from the NBA. A lot of news there. The NHL, big news there with Brady Tkachuk getting traded to join his brother Matthew down at the Florida Panthers. We'll dive into the NHL, NBA, and the good, the bad, and the ugly before we are done. Included in the good, the bad, the ugly, one of the more touching Father's Day stories we'll find for you on the eve or on the wake of Father's Day yesterday. Congratulations. Hope every dad out there had a great day. Great weekend. Let's dive right into the scorecard here in Major League Baseball. Milwaukee beat up Atlanta 9-4, the win yesterday for the Brewers. They moved to 46-29. White Sox fought tooth and nail with Detroit, but fall in Motor City 5-4 yesterday. Tigers with that win 33-44. That was in 10 innings yesterday. Cleveland lost to Houston 2-1. St. Louis beat up Kansas City in a high-scoring affair 12-10. Pittsburgh beats the Rockies in Denver 8-6. And the Minnesota Twins are cooking with gas. They have now won 6 of their last 7 games. Yesterday's contest didn't really open up a bunch until the final frame for Minnesota.
And the 2-2 from Thompson, a swing and a line drive right center field deep in the gap, and this one will not be caught. It hits off the body of Tawa and finds the wall. Larnach will stop at second base. A big two-out ninth inning RBI double from Larnach, and the Twins add on and lead 4-2.
There you go. Corey Provis on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Twins manager Derek Shelton after the team's 4-2 win. Minnesota nearing a .500 record. They're 38-41. What was the key to the win yesterday? Here's manager Derek Shelton.
Well, I think there's a couple big ones. Paredes being able to finish 5. Josh Bell, big pinch hit, 2-out base hit. And then Alex Jackson comes in. I mean, a couple good things. He starts the one inning with the bunt base hit. To put us ahead there, and then the big throwout of Perdomo in the eighth inning. So overall, really good team win. We did some nice things defensively. Kieschel played well at second. Cody made a really nice play in the outfield, and we were able to hold them off. Our bullpen was really strong.
That's Twins manager Derek Shelton. Minnesota has won 6 of their last 7 games. 4-2, the final yesterday in Arizona. Today and tonight in Major League Baseball, Yankees open it up against the Tigers at 5:10, Royals at Rays, Cubs at the Mets, Brewers at Reds. Other games on the docket, Guardians visiting the White Sox, Cardinals home to the D-backs, Rockies host the Red Sox, and Minnesota opens up a 3-game set against the L.A. Dodgers. 6:40 tonight, 6 o'clock, the pregame coverage right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. In the WNBA last night, Las Vegas got by Golden State 92-73, and Minnesota falls at home to Washington. Mystics get the win 84-79. Minnesota's new record is 13-4. Tonight, no standalone games. There are about 3 games on the docket, but the one closest to home, Fever going to be home to the Mercury, 7 o'clock on USA. Let's talk about the NBA. The draft is tomorrow night, and certainly a lot to talk about there. Wizards hold the top pick, Utah second, Memphis third, Chicago fourth, and the Clippers hold pick number 5. But all of the news, all of the drama is about a coaching change, a coaching hire for the Dallas Mavericks as they go off the beaten path and hire one of the biggest names in college basketball, Brian Windhorst, on Dusty May being the guy in Dallas.
Dusty May has been high on NBA teams' lists as a guy that they could get for a year or so now, even before he was a national champion coach. The Golden State Warriors, had Steve Kerr decided to retire, I think he would have been high on the Golden State Warriors list. And Masai Ujiri and the Mavericks really wanted a college coach. They tried multiple times, from what I am told, to talk John Shire into coming to Dallas. They made multiple runs at him. Mm-hmm. Obviously, yes, the Cooper Flag connection there that played a role. They were not going to be able to convince John Shire to come, but Dusty May has been on their roster for a while. And if I'm not mistaken, he did agree to a contract extension in Michigan.
He did.
But I don't think he ever signed it. I think that contract has been sitting on his desk for several weeks, unsigned, I think because he had interest in moving on to the NBA.
There you go. Dusty May, the new head coach of the Dallas Mavericks. What do you think of the hire, Jay Williams?
This is a long-term play. I think Dusty May, from spending time with him, is an absolute genius in the game of basketball. I think even in addition to his genius on the court, he has a great feeling for EQ and IQ, the combination of them both, he has it. And he's a player's first coach. He understands systems. He understands how to let players build and grow over time. I'm kind of shocked. I'm reacting to it in real time, but I think this is a big-time hire by the Dallas Mavericks. So, and I like it for Cooper Flagg as well.
And again, in the sports world, if we're talking football, basketball, other sports, even pro baseball, we recently saw a hire from the college ranks to the pros. You always get that old adage, oh, it's not the same game. It's different. You know, you can hire the biggest whiz kid or the greatest motivator from college, and it's not always apples to apples in the big leagues. And that might be true, but it's also true that the games are starting to get a little bit more similar, both in style of the game, but also substance in the locker room. Players getting paid, NIL deals, shorter-term nature, motivation similar, working with folks that are having different goals rather than 20, 30, 40 years ago. I want to graduate college. I would like to be a 4-year starter. I would like to go to the NBA someday, but not next year. Where college now is, would like to make some more money. I would like to go ahead and get to the NBA next year. Build me a resume in 3 months, coach, that can get me to the NBA. It's a very similar game now to the NBA based on what it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. So for me, I think this hire could be a really good one for Dallas, especially because this is a young team with a lot of familiarity and folks that aren't veterans that are going to turn up their nose. Oh, look at this young hotshot college coach coming in here and trying to tell me how to play NBA ball. That's not going to happen in Dallas. Dusty May, pretty darn good hire. Jay Williams, a little bit more here on that transition from college to pro, and if we'll see more coaches have their names called in the years ahead.
I think we're going to see more of this coming down the pipeline because of how college is becoming more like the pros overnight. Like watching the way John Shire and Dusty May have been able to raise capital, watching the way they've hired GMs, watching the way they've delegated responsibilities to those GMs to recruit the talent and the systems they have in place, it mimics more and more like a real NBA franchise. So I think you're seeing college coaches be able to adapt a lot more with being pulled up to the higher ranks now.
That's Jay Williams on the Dusty May hire. If you missed it, Dusty May, Michigan head coach, taking the job with the Dallas Mavericks and a big jump into the NBA. More details on that as we move forward on this Monday, June 22nd edition of Overtime. But the big news that we're all waiting on, pins and needles for, is Giannis Antetokounmpo. Will he be traded? Where will he be traded? And what will he be traded for? Here's ESPN's Shams Charania.
Sources tell me a trade and a resolution is coming for the Milwaukee Bucks with Giannis Antetokounmpo before the NBA draft on Tuesday night. The Bucks are in serious conversations with two finalists, the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. Both teams are Giannis's preferred trade destinations, but both of these packages are different deals. The variance of these deals is dramatic. With Boston, it's Jaylen Brown-led package. It's around a veteran player, obviously a superstar caliber player. In Miami, it's a group of cost-controlled players, rookie scale contracts, significant draft capital in that deal. And so I do want to make this clear, though, whichever deal occurs, whether it's today or tomorrow, it is going to be a one-to-one deal. It's going to consist of Milwaukee and likely one of these two teams, and that's how it's going to be. There's no third team, fourth team in any construct right now.
The right now is the operative word, but the urgency from Shams Charania evident. It appears that before tomorrow's round number one of the NBA draft, Giannis Antetokounmpo will be turning in his green for green in Boston, or turning in his green for Milwaukee for some red and black down in Miami. Those are the two finalists right now. Other sleeper teams, of course, could still emerge. Here is Brian Windhorst on the Boston Celtics that are all in on moving off of Jaylen Brown for Giannis.
I was really skeptical that the Boston Celtics were going to go all in on this. And from what I understand, they have. The Celtics and the Heat are the two teams aggressively going after Giannis. I would say they are the finalists. And if Giannis is going to be traded in the next 24 hours, which I think is a good chance of happening, I think it's either going to be to Boston or Miami. And the Boston thing is one. They were very cautious about putting Jaylen Brown in this an official firm offer. I believe they have. Jaylen Brown is on the table, and Jaylen Brown could get traded for Giannis Antetokounmpo in the short-term future.
That's Brian Windhorst. There's a lot to unpack here, and you could have your kind of way with, I would take this trade over that trade. We don't know all the nuts and bolts and all the details. The more lucrative draft pick offer, the kick it down the can towards the future. You know, we gave up the superstar, but we got this in 2028, in 2029, in 2030, and these young players. That is the Miami Heat offer by many details that are out there. For the Boston Celtics offer, for Milwaukee's perspective, you're going to get Jaylen Brown, who is a blue-chip, talented player. You can pair him with Miles Turner and others there in Milwaukee, and maybe you could be back to relevance a little bit sooner. But many people noting that maybe Milwaukee shouldn't be interested in that particular deal just because they're not going anywhere fast, at least even with the as currently constructed. We'll wait and see about all of the details, but it appears Jaylen Brown for Giannis, some other ancillary pieces available, and then Miami is just going to be a haul of young players, flexible contracts, cheap contracts, draft picks. Miami is the haul for the future. Boston Hall going to be a little bit more for the here and now. We'll see exactly what comes of that Giannis Antetokounmpo trade if it gets done in the hours ahead. Again, that prohibitive deadline coming up tomorrow night for round number one of the NBA draft. Washington holds pick number one, followed by Utah, Memphis, Chicago, and the Clippers. In the NHL, their draft is coming up before the week is through. Toronto holds the top pick, followed by San Jose, Vancouver, Chicago, and the New York Rangers. Over to the NASCAR world, a first-time winner at a first-time race from Coronado, based there in San Diego. Corey Heim won his first career race over the weekend. Next up on the circuit, it'll be at Sonoma. The race on Sunday, 2:30 on TNT and HBO. And over to the National Football League, where Jordan Rodgers is talking about Brendan Sorsby's upside and had this to say in comparison with the top two quarterbacks taken back in April.
I believe he has a higher ceiling than Mendoza or Simpson. Now, I still would have had him at QB3 if he was in this past draft. Both those guys, I think, are pro-ready. Sorsby, a little bit more of a project, but the tape, when you turn it on, he has an elite ability to throw with touch and accuracy. Deep ball thrower, it's so pretty. Not only do I think he's the best touch and accuracy thrower that I've maybe evaluated in the last 5 years or so, but he can throw with velocity. He's 6'3", 235, runs a 4.6 40. He has an extremely high ceiling. If you took Carson Beck, or you took Drew Aller or Cade Klubnik in the third, fourth, fifth round, whatever it was, this guy's better. So why not double down, grab him for a second or a third? The value's there because he would have been a first round pick or an early second. And I think you have a guy that can be a franchise quarterback.
Clearly, there's a lot of mixed opinion on Brendan Sorsby, in particular, one asset of his game or detriment to his game. That's accuracy. I've had a couple people on this show tell me, you know, he's not that accurate. He's really darn dynamic. He's got a big arm. He's not that accurate. Then you have Jordan Rodgers saying, it's unbelievable how accurate this kid is. Safe to say, if he were in this past draft, he would have been quarterback 2, quarterback 3, maybe QB 4 in the draft class behind Carson Beck. And now we're seeing the supplemental draft drive up the value a little bit, especially because you essentially get a free season before you owe the draft capital for taking Brendan Sorsby if there is a supplemental draft. Still not confirmed. We expect it to be confirmed. But if that is confirmed moving forward, that'll come up really quickly in the middle of the month of July. Let's move forward on the scorecard. That was Jordan Rodgers of ESPN. Golf world, Wyndham Clark, a U.S. Open champion for the second time in his young career, wins it yesterday at 4 under par. Stiff-arming. Barely. Sam Burns by 3 under. Scottie Scheffler was tied for 4th at even par for the tournament. Next up, the Travelers Championship running Thursday through Sunday. And the next major coming up in the middle of July, the Open running July 16th through the 19th. Well, we got our wish for the College World Series, a dead heat between two games. UNC beat Oklahoma, staving off elimination yesterday, 6-2. Tar Heels moving on to the College World Series finale tonight, taking on Oklahoma once again. Winner take all, game 3, 6 o'clock on ESPN. UNC, Tar Heels favored, minus 150 on the money line. And back to Friday, FIFA World Cup. Team USA all over Australia, 2-0. USA now 2-0-0, and they officially win Group D. That means they have the best possible path they could have asked for into the knockout stage. They can't improve their position. They can't get any worse. They'll face off with Turkey on Thursday. Sam Borden talking about best case scenario and what might be deemed as a success moving forward now that Team USA is officially in to the next round.
That's like a reasonable expectation. I think getting to the quarterfinals is almost like, to me, that would be the baseline for a successful World Cup. And then going around beyond that would be historic. I think it's going to take a lot more of the kind of game that we saw against Paraguay, and it's going to take some luck. And they may be getting that luck. You know, by winning the group, they could have a game against Bosnia in the round of 32, which would be certainly a winnable game. Belgium might be the best team on their side of the bracket, which, again, Belgium's a very good team and has eliminated them in previous World Cups, but, like, not Brazil, not Argentina, it's not France. It's a winnable game, for sure. And so at that point, you're looking at a quarterfinal, you know? You're looking at the possibility of maybe making that extra step. And so I think that they're going to need to get Pulisic back. In my mind, that's a no-brainer. They need to get him back and healthy. They need to be able to continue playing like they did against Paraguay, and they need a little bit of luck. Just like every team that has ever gone far, the World Cup does. They need a little bit of the ball breaking their way.
And that's Sam Borden of ESPN Soccer. Team USA winning Friday afternoon, 2-0 over the Australians. Yesterday, Spain defeated Saudi Arabia 4-0. Belgium drew with Iran 0-0. Uruguay drew with Cape Verde 2-2. That's a great story in the tourney. And lastly, Egypt's first ever World Cup win came yesterday over New Zealand 3-1. Today at the World Cup, underway at noon, Argentina taking on Austria on Fox. France facing Iraq 4 o'clock on Fox. Norway and Senegal colliding 7 o'clock on Fox. And lastly, Jordan and Algeria locking horns a 10 o'clock start time tonight on Fox Sports 1. Let's dive right in to your ReliaBank headlines of the day. Hour number one on a Monday. The Sioux Falls Canaries used a pair of five-run innings to roll Plas Cleburne 13-6 Sunday night in the rubber match of a three-game series. The Railroaders scored twice in the bottom of the first, and each team notched a run in their half of the second. Anthony Sharkus crossed home plate at a throwing error before Cleburne responded with an RBI single. Canaries scored five times in the top of the third and never trailed after that 13-6 win. Canaries are now 19-16, one game back at Kansas City for first place in the West, and they open a three-game series on the road at Kansas City coming up tomorrow night. A year ago, according to ESPN.com, Wyndham Clark had to apologize for smashing Oakmont Country Club's 121-year-old lockers after he missed the cut in the U.S. Open. Clark didn't leave any dents at Shinnecock Hills Golf Club on Long Island this week, but he certainly left his mark as he captured his second U.S. Open title Sunday after nearly squandering a six-stroke lead in the final round before holding on for a one-stroke victory. Clark became the ninth wire-to-wire winner of the U.S. Open with a closing round of 3 over 73, saw his lead shrink to only one stroke in Sunday's final round. Sam Burns narrowly missed birdie putts on 17 and 18. Clark took control once again, winning the U.S. Open for the second time. Scottie Scheffler, a big story, couldn't get anything going on the greens in Sunday's 1 over 71. He tied for fourth, along with Keith Mitchell and JT Poston. Very entertaining U.S. Open. Wyndham Clark almost surrendering that big lead, but credit to him staying the course, and certainly a pro Scheffler crowd in that final pairing over Clark. Kudos to him for sticking it out and finding a way to his second U.S. Open victory. And lastly, the big news of the day that has shaken up the college basketball world and the NBA. Michigan coach Dusty May finalizing a deal to become the next head coach of the Dallas Mavericks. Sources told ESPN that is an axis-shifting move that significantly alters the college and NBA landscape. 49-year-old just led Michigan basketball to the national title, and he'll coach a franchise with Cooper Flagg as a linchpin. Mavericks fired Jason Kidd after a 26-56 season last year. May led Michigan to a 64-13 record over just 2 years in Ann Arbor. In his previous job, he led Florida Atlantic to back-to-back NCAA tournaments, including a Final Four run in 2023. He's the first college head coach to take an NBA job since former Michigan coach in a cautionary tale, John Beilein, took the Cavaliers job back in 2019. The last to leave college immediately after winning a national title was Kansas's Larry Brown in 1988. Florida's Billy Donovan was the most recent NCAA title-winning coach to leave for the NBA back in 2015. There are a lot of cautionary tales here. And as excited as you can get for the Mavericks, or if you're a Mavs fan, for your squad, you also got to think, okay, well, we've seen this before. We've seen the hotshot coach. We've seen the Brad Stevens. We've seen Billy Donovan and many others in history make the jump up, and it doesn't yield top-tier results, as in NBA titles. We'll wait and see. Dusty May, a very inspiring young coach, still 49 years old, really liked the hire, and it is a different landscape, different game now. The similarities between the NBA and the college game have never been stronger than they are today. They'll be stronger tomorrow, but they'll never be stronger as they are today. So Dusty May, if he can figure it out in college, take two different programs to the Final Four, win a national title in recent memory, as in a few months ago with Michigan, think he can get the job done in the NBA. That'll be a very fun watch with the Dallas Mavericks, especially how that roster takes shape under the tutelage of Dusty May with the NBA draft right in front of us. Those are your ReliaBank headlines of the day for hour number one. As always, for a better local banking option, you can check them out in person here in the 605 or online at ReliaBank.com. When we come back, it's Monday. We like to look back on the weekend, but also on sports history. What happened on this day in sports history? I'm so glad you asked. On this day in sports history, coming up next, as well as World Cup college baseball talk, including a really cool Packer connection in the win over Team Australia on Friday. We dive right in on this day in sports history and more coming up next on a Monday edition of Overtime.
Overtime is in the middle of your workday. Unwrap your sandwich and get caught up with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Just getting going on this Monday, June 22nd edition of the show. Welcome back into overtime. We like to look back on this day in sports history on Mondays, and we start all the way back in 1874 today with the official, unofficial start of a sport. 1874 on this day in sports history.
History repeats itself.
Down goes Frazier!
Well, sometimes.
What are they going to roll it? He caught it? Touchdown! He did what?
In the world of sports, there are moments that are fleeting.
My, oh my!
And some that live forever.
Russell looks, throws inside. Oh my God, he's picked off!
Oh, he broke his ankles!
Snap good, spot down. Walsh's kick is up, and it is no good! He missed it! Are you kidding me?
It's time for Bert to deliver those moments that happened on this day in sports history.
All right, we start all the way back in 1874, where I would assume there was some sort of yard gathering where the game of lawn tennis was introduced on this day by Welsh Major Walter Clopton Wingfield, who introduced a rubber ball to bounce on grass. I always like to put myself in those situations. Okay, this guy's got a ball and he wants me to swing this racket and we're going to call it lawn tennis. Oh, nobody will ever play this. This was weird. Honey, what did you think of that game we played? Oh, it's one of the most popular sports in the entire world. 100+ years later, 1874, game of lawn tennis introduced on this day in sports history. 1889. On this day, Louisville Colonels set the Major League Baseball record in a bad way with their 26th consecutive loss. Bad month for Louisville Colonel baseball, 1889. Fast forward to 1930, some dude named Lou Gehrig, New York Yankees first baseman, smashed three homers in a 20-13 win over the Philadelphia A's at Shibe Park. Speaking of Philly, 1959, pitcher Sandy Koufax struck out 16 Philadelphia Phillies. 1961, Major League Baseball Chicago Cubs star Ernie Banks ended a tremendous streak on this day in 61. His streak of 717 consecutive games played came to a close on this day in 1961. One of the famous rants in the sports world, back to tennis, lawn tennis, John McEnroe's famous "You cannot be serious" rant in the first round win over Tom Gullickson at Wimbledon was on this day in 1981. Also, other events to get to. 82, Philadelphia Phillies infielder Pete Rose got his 3,772nd career hit. That moves him past Hammer and Hank Aaron to get into second place. 1984, Carl Pohlad became the CEO of the Minnesota Twins. And lastly, just last year, 2025, Oklahoma City Thunder beat the Pacers in Game 7, 103-91, winning the franchise's first NBA title since moving from Seattle to OKC. And the guard, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, was your MVP just last year. Speaking of all-time greats, how about guys that have awards named after them to celebrate for birthdays today? Passed away back in 1977, but the legacy lives on for Davey O'Brien, the American College Football Hall of Fame quarterback, Heisman Trophy winner, TCU, on to the NFL with the Eagles, born in Dallas, Texas. On this day in 1917, O'Brien passed away in 77. Pistol Pete Maravich celebrating a birthday today. The American Baseball Hall of Fame guard, five-time All-Star, scoring champion in 1977. Born in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, 1947. Pistol Pete passed away in 1988. Today is the 64th birthday of Clyde Drexler, the American NBA guard, 10-time All-Star, born in New Orleans. Also birthday today for Burlington, Iowa native. Everybody loves the underdog. Got a great underdog story for UNI Panther alum Kurt Warner, American Pro Football Hall of Famer, Super Bowl winner, MVP winner with the Rams. Kurt Warner, born in 1971. Other notable names to celebrate today. Very busy day on this day in sports history. Champ Bailey celebrating a birthday today. University of Georgia wide receiver, corner, played for the Washington football team. Denver Broncos, born in Fort Campbell, Kentucky, on this day in 1978. Also celebrating a birthday today, Dustin Johnson, American golfer, Ryder Cup winner four times over, U.S. Open winner back in 2016, was born on this day, 1984, in Columbia, South Carolina. And lastly, many time over, Sixth man of the year, Danny Green in the NBA, scoring, a shooting guard, small forward with the Spurs, Raptors, Lakers, three-time NBA champion. Danny Green, born on this day in 1987. Other news to get to that's on this day in sports history. Let's talk about the College World Series. North Carolina head coach Scott Forbes had to make a quick pitching change when starter Ryan Lynch tweaked his left oblique midway through game two of the College World Series finals yesterday. Forbes called on freshman Caden Glauber for his 29th time this year. And for the 29th time he's pitched, the Tar Heels won yet again. The 6-2 win over Oklahoma kept alive their pursuit of the school's first national title in baseball. Winner take all game three is coming up tonight. Forbes saying this is what it's all about. This is why you work so hard to play in a night game, national championship game. We're excited about the opportunity. The Sooners, 42-23, scored twice in the first, and things were not looking good or feeling good for North Carolina. They find their way back into it. They win yesterday, that final 6-2, and we have a winner-take-all game three of the College World Series tonight, 6 o'clock on ESPN. Well, it's a position that the U.S. men's national team could scarcely dream about. Heading into the FIFA World Cup, after winning their first two matches, Team USA has already qualified for the next round. They still got one to play. And there's a big article, big write-up up there right now at ESPN.com. What would you do if you were the head coach of the national team, U.S. manager Mauricio Pochettino? How do you attack the game against Turkey that's coming up on Thursday? Do you play your stars? Do you rest your stars? Do you play your starting lineup as you would any other game? Do you keep that continuity? Do you give the team another 90-minute-plus match to gel and jive together? What's the best plan of attack there? For me, I am absolutely positively keeping Pulisic on the sideline. He needs to be healthy for a run, whether he's back for the next round or the round after that. You got to give him his best foot forward opportunity to make some hay, get back on the field. Now, certainly there's other players out there. Balogun won. Do you rest him a little bit? Things were getting pretty chippy, pretty feisty against Team Australia. And you don't want to risk things here. Yellow cards, red cards. You don't want to risk anything like that, much less injury in the game against Turkey. But you don't want to lay down either. National pride at an all-time high in the sport. You want to go out and win. That would be amazing. Go out and win. But you also got to be smart here for Team USA. So it's all about messaging. And we'll see about the strategery, if you will, for Team USA moving forward. By the way, if you missed it, Alex Freeman had a tremendous goal to put Team USA up on Friday afternoon, 2-0. And Alex Freeman has got quite the lineage. He is the son of Packer Hall of Famer Antonio Freeman. He was able to punch in a header to give the Americans a 2-0 lead in the first half. Initially, it was called offsides, and then the review came down, a little bit of a lengthy review, and was initially called offside by the refs, but the assistance of VAR, it was overturned as Freeman had not completely crossed the back leg of the last Australian defender when the ball was put into the air. Team USA with still a lot to play for, but nothing left to play for in this group stage. Their next match coming up on Thursday against Turkey. Lot to get to from the World Cup quickly here. Egypt got their first ever World Cup win yesterday over New Zealand. And Cape Verde continues to cruise. And by cruise, I mean they continue to tie opponents, but it's one hell of a story. You know, in soccer, there's so many different variances of outcomes. You can get your butt whipped. You can whip somebody's butt. You can tie in a high-scoring game, low-scoring game, a game that has no goals. And that's what Cape Verde's been able to do in one game, a 0-0 draw in their opener, and then a 2-2 draw against Uruguay just yesterday. And these are not slouch teams, slouch nations. Spain was the team they tied 0-0 last week, and they did it again against Uruguay on Sunday, coming from behind to earn that draw. That's going to be a very interesting group because Cape Verde could be in the driver's seat, could be in consideration for advancement onto the knockout stage. Really cool stuff in the World Cup. Quick check of the odds before we dive into our break in the World Cup as we move forward. And Team USA has solidified themselves into a certifiable contender at this stage. So we look at the futures tab here, DraftKings Sportsbook. Team USA now has the 10th best odds. Matter of fact, tied for 9th best odds. Still France and Spain. France plus 400, Spain plus 500, England plus 600, Argentina plus 700, and Portugal rounding out the top five at plus 1,000 odds right now. Brazil, Germany, Netherlands, Norway, Team USA, that's the top 10. And for those looking for an underdog, Cape Verde's stock here, still not great. They have the fifth longest odds among teams on the board, but it's been an inspired performance. That's what we love so much about events like this or the Olympics. Score one for the little guy. Hell of a performance, hell of a tournament so far for Cape Verde. We'll take a break when we come back. Sioux Falls Canaries, a win yesterday, a series victory, and a lot of season still ahead. What are the highlights so far? Where can this team get better? And we're going to tell you about one player that is lighting up the stat sheet so far this season for the Birds. We'll dive right in. The manager of the Sioux Falls Canaries, Mike Meyer, joins us next on this Monday edition of Overtime.
You want more of Overtime? It's all on the podcast. Free with the app or online at ESPN Sioux Falls. Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Right back with you on this Monday edition of Overtime. Well, it's not a Sioux Falls summer without a trip to the Birdcage. The Sioux Falls Canaries out to a 19-16 start to the season. They'll be home later on this week, Friday through Sunday, hosting Kane County. But between now and then, they got a big series middle of the week, Tuesday through Thursday in Kansas City. Here to talk about his team, his ball club, Sioux Falls Canaries manager Mike Meyer joins us on the ESPN hotline. Coach, it's always great to have you on the show. Welcome back in. How was your weekend?
Yeah, thanks for having me. No, it was good. We down in Texas, enjoying the heat. played a good series, ended up taking 2 out of 3. So it was a good weekend for us.
19-16, the start to the season for you, Coach. Let's talk about the recent stretch. What do you think about your team's play over the last handful of games? Are you feel like the team's playing hard, trending in the right direction? You guys have the same number of wins as the division leader, Kansas City, right now. Just one game back with two additional losses. What do you think of your club so far through the first, 35 games of the year?
Yeah, we're doing okay. We definitely had, some tough injuries. Jabari Henry has been down for the last 3 weeks. Our number one starter, pitching coach Thomas Dorman, he's been down for 2 weeks. He's just now starting to get back out there out of the bullpen. So we've had to move one of our bullpen arms into the rotation, which kind of weakened our bullpen for a little bit until we found reinforcements. And just recently we've been down Josh Raywall for 10 days, but he's going to be back tomorrow, thank goodness, because he's been putting up some crazy numbers. With those three, the big three guys down and still, a couple games over 500, I feel like that puts us in a really good spot, especially as we start to get healthy again.
And certainly there's a lot of stars on the squad. Josh Raywalt, aforementioned, down with an injury, but he's got a league-best 381 average, also leads the league in on-base percentage right now. I know he's down with an injury right now, but what do you think about his preparation and the process that has led to the success so far this year that makes you feel optimistic that he can continue that great stat run the rest of the way?
So Josh has, always been blessed with the size and the power, and I feel like every year his at-bats have gotten better. His understanding of what they're trying to do to him and what he's looking for, and I feel like this year, more than most, he's been okay accepting the walks and waiting for them to make a mistake out of the over the plate. I'm not saying he's Barry Bonds by any stretch of the imagination, but the 1 year where Barry Bonds walked 200 and something times, he was okay with doing that, and that's where Josh has been this year, where in the past he may try to go out and get that pitch that's a few inches off the plate because he hasn't seen a strike all day. He's accepting the fact that they're just going to pitch around him a little bit, but he's also ready to launch when he does get a mistake, which is not an easy thing to do. So I'm excited to get him back tomorrow and see how he does, and hopefully we can get him back into that rhythm.
Talking Sioux Falls Canary Baseball, manager Mike Meyer, our guest here on a Monday edition of Overtime. For the latest and greatest on those Canaries, sfcanaries.com. You can also follow them on Twitter, at Canaries. Coach, broadly speaking, we talked about the recent stretch, the first 35 games, but broadly speaking, right now, of course, injuries are very much in play for your squad. Where does your team excel statistically, or as a matter of fact, in the game itself, but also what are one or two areas that you think specifically needs a lot of work moving forward if the Canaries are going to go on another deep run this year?
Yeah, so, you know, we've had to kind of rebuild our roster. Over the last 3 years, we've had, you know, pretty much the same roster. So this year was not a total rebuild, but it was definitely a reload. You know, last year at the 30-game mark, we hit 55 homers. This year we hit 25. But we're still scoring the same amount of runs. We are a lot flatter attack angle hitters where we're hitting a lot of line drives. We can run a little bit more than we have in the past. We're a little bit more athletic. We walk more than we have in the past. So that's been kind of fun to see that we don't need to rely on the three-run homer. Our bullpen depth, I think this year, even though our bullpen was outstanding last year, is probably a little bit better this year. The biggest issue we've had has been in our rotation, and it's something that we're trying to address. You know, we just haven't been able to consistently get guys going out there giving us six innings. We've had decent outings, but the pitch counts get driven up. And so now we got to go into that bullpen, and our bullpen has been kind of worn down a little bit here in the first 30-something games. So that's something we definitely need to get better at. And the other issue is we haven't been consistent defensively. We have the potential to be really good defensively, and we have stretches where we play really good defense, but we also have stretches where we're maybe not focused, and we don't make the plays that need to be made. We're also extremely young. This is the youngest team we've had in probably 5 years. So, you know, some of those younger guy growing pains I think we're seeing here. But the last 10 games we've played significantly better. So hopefully we can keep that going.
Talking Sioux Falls Canary Baseball, manager Mike Meyer, our guest on a Monday. You mentioned the youth of the team, Coach. Highlight one or two of those young guys that you feel like are giving it their all and could be a big name in short order for the Canaries, whether or not their stats are there yet. Are there a couple names that come to mind as the next big-time players for the Canaries that are just getting their feet under them in Sioux Falls?
Yeah, I think we have three of them, you know, in our lineup. Anthony Hall, he was a top draft pick by the Yankees out of Oregon. Got off to an abysmal start, but we kept him in the lineup, and he's now hitting 300. His OPS is up to 880. Beautiful left-handed swing. He can really hit. Takes great at-bats. So he's somebody that, you know, either has the potential of getting re-signed or hopefully can be a staple in our lineup for a year or two. Our shortstop, Michael Chiarelli, was a high draft pick by the Cardinals out of UCLA. I knew he was very athletic. He's been better than I thought at the plate. He's hitting third for us, and he's been doing great. And then the other guy is Anthony Sharkus. And this guy can really run. We call him Shark. He can really, really, really fly. Had an inside the park home run the other day in Cleburne. Got some juice. He just hasn't figured out how to use it yet. All the natural tools are there. He's really starting to turn it on here lately, the last 10 days or so. He's hitting 303, on base at 380, something like that. His OPS is in the 800s. So three new guys all with above league average OPSs in their first year in our league, and that's not easy to do. So they've been exciting for us, and, you know, they kind of help out when we've got Mike Harton, Josh Raywalt, and Jabari Henry, the older guys in that lineup.
Certainly a lot to look forward to for the Sioux Falls Canaries. Record is 19-16. Good for second place in the Western Division right now, trailing just Kansas City. And a reminder, they'll be home this weekend. And there's a couple theme nights on the way. Friday is Area 51 night, and Saturday, I know this will be a hit with my kids and many kids in the Sioux Empire. It is Pokemon night coming up on Saturday at the Birdcage. Canaries manager Mike Meyer. Before we cut you loose, Mike, just give us a scout to the next six games for your team. Kansas City in the middle of the week. Kane County coming in Friday through Sunday. What do you think about the importance of these next few games for your squad?
Yeah, it's a big week for us. Obviously we're chasing Kansas City. We're one game behind them in the standings in the Western Division. So it's a big one. We got to try to figure out a way to get, two wins here midweek. And then we go home and we face King County, who's the one that knocked us off in Game 5 of the Championship Series. So we've kind of started a little bit of a rivalry out of the East Division, so it'd be nice to get a little bit of payback in our home ballpark and take a couple games from them. Their manager, I played for him for 3 years in St. Paul, and he was kind of my mentor, so... a lot of similarities in our clubs, so it should be a good week of baseball and hopefully we play well and we can kind of move up in the standings.
Certainly a lot to look forward to this year. Sioux Falls Canaries out to a nice start, 19-16, the record. That's manager Mike Meyer. Coach, go get him. Thanks as always for the time. We'll talk to you again real soon. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Bert.
All right. Mike Meyer, our guest here on a Monday. Canaries are 19-16, and you mentioned there, with the injuries taking their toll. Those are not just run-of-the-mill names that are affecting the lineup. Those are the big hitters, the tried-and-true veterans, Jabari Henry, Mike Hart, and others. Josh Raywalt, statistically the best player on the team in the batter's box, a .381 average. That is not just the best on the team, but the best in the entire association. Also has the best on-base percentage in the entire league as well. Missed guys in injuries, and that tells you all you need to know about the future outlook this season and beyond for the Canaries. Expectations sky high, 19-16 start, dealing with a lot of injuries. They'll be back home this weekend again, Area 51 night on Friday, Pokemon night. I need to pencil that into my calendar coming up on Saturday from the Birdcage. SFCanaries.com for the latest and greatest there. You can also follow them on Twitter at Canaries, tagged in today's show log. That, believe it or not, is the entirety of hour number one. Came and went in the blink of an eye. Coming up next, headlines and highlights reset at the top of the hour. We'll also dive into the NFL news of the day, and I have made a list over the weekend. I worked hard to put a list together of the teams that should be interested in Brendan Sorsby, why they're interested, and what category do they fall into? Are they the teams that need Sorsby to be their guy next year? I've got, what is that, 8 teams in that category? A year one or year two need, down the road need, maybe, and then would be surprised. So the 4 categories I scientifically put together over the weekend, that and more on the way on a Monday edition of Overtime coming up next.